Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Before we get into the world of sports and baseball and what's going on with NASCAR, which is so disturbing, and Jamal Adams and Dak Prescott and all that stuff, let's have a moment of enjoyable conversation and just say good morning and how was the weekend to the guys. Good morning, Chris Canty. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. It was a nice three-day weekend for me. I played golf with my parents on Juneteenth, and you'd be happy to know that we did not have an alligator sighting.
So you won.
No, I didn't win. I just said we didn't have an alligator sighting. I was playing pretty good golf on the front nine. I parred five out of the first nine holes, so things were going pretty well for me. Then it just all fell apart on the back nine. I don't know what happened. Got a little bit of the shanks. But all in all, it was a good weekend. It was a good day. Just being able to spend time with my parents, it was pretty cool.
Good. I'm glad. And Rick, did your kids spoil you to no end yesterday?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was a roller coaster. I cried yesterday. Cried watching the ESPYs. A couple positives, though. Well, I mean, the kids gave me, it was a beautiful day out. We got to swim in the pool, pancakes, waffles, but then they made me, this book with all the different pictures when they were babies and just watching them grow up. And you know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
To see them where they're at now and they're swimming and everything else to when they were little babies, I was a little bit emotional.
I don't disagree. I would think that it would be.
Happens fast, man. It doesn't feel like it.
I got five more years of Ben, and then he's gone.
Which is crazy, because in the middle of the day, you're like, oh, man, when's dinner? When's bedtime?
But then all of a sudden, you start thinking about lunch at 9:45, right?
It's the only thing that gets you through the day. And then all of a sudden, you look at all these pictures, and like, wow, Ella's already 3 years old. She's going to be four. I mean, what happened? Where'd the time go?
It goes fast, yeah. It goes really, really fast.
Couple positives, though, Dave.
I imagine they fed you well yesterday.
Yeah, they gorged me. Yeah. I mean, it was too much. I had peanut butter and strawberry pancakes. I had blueberry lemon ricotta pancakes. I had chocolate chip waffles. I had cinnamon sugar walnut pancakes. I mean, you name it. I had it yesterday.
Good.
Too much.
And you didn't have to do anything, right? It was all done for you?
The cooking was done for me, yeah. I was the pool guy yesterday. Casted the cooking while I had the kids in the pool, which is fine, which was good.
Okay.
Some positives, though, I will say this coming out of the weekend, is apparently there's a second kind of diving that I'm pretty good at, like Jacques Cousteau now. Milo throws the stuff in the deep end, and then we dive in, and we have to get it over and over and over again until I get so much water in my ears that I have vertigo in the water.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, there is no concern that my son Milo will ever be caught in an OTB betting horses after what happened on Saturday.
Why, he was a disaster with the belt?
He had a breakdown. No, he had a breakdown. What, Ella picked.
He picked the wrong horse, and he freaked out?
Freaked out. Seconds into the race, he quit. He just quit on horse racing and had a fit. He picked the green horse, which was Sol Volante, who was the number two horse. So the race starts, and Milo goes, "Where's my horse? Where's the number two horse?" And Cass is like, he's in last place. That's it, I'm done. And he just said he had a breakdown.
So he couldn't even make it through the 90 seconds of the race. He was done.
No, he was done. 15 seconds in, he was done. His horse was in last place. He quit. It's done. No more horse racing for him. It was all set. And, of course, Ella likes pink, so she picked the winner, and he was even more mad. Oh, man, to be young. I wish I was 5 years old.
How was your weekend, Dave?
It was good. It was good for a beautiful weekend. I felt like I was missing out on my weather forecast, but the weekend was nice weather-wise. And then yesterday, I didn't have to worry about anything. Food was provided for me. We went on a beautiful long walk. We did a little bit of basketball in the driveway. Alex worked on his lacrosse a little bit. Food was then again provided a second time. And then we, putzed around a little bit around the house. And then food was provided for a third time. And it was nice. I got a back massage last night. It was very, very nice.
So how is that different than any other day in the Rothenberg household?
It's a day. Okay. It's a day. Okay. It's happy day.
I'll tell you what. Typically, I'm the one that helps plan the food. Not always do I make the food, although I've become excellent at a mac and cheese and peanut butter and jelly and those kind of things.
Box mac and cheese doesn't count, Dave.
Well, that's really all I can do. But typically I'm involved in like the planning, like where we're going to get it from or how we're going to make it or let me set the table or let me clear or I'm very good at dishes now. None of that's happening now. Like yesterday, I didn't have to do anything. I made sure that when we were done eating, I got up and left the table, so I wasn't even asked to do anything. It was beautiful. It was sensational.
I made sure I got up and left the table.
Well, yeah, because I didn't want to be asked. I shouldn't have to do anything on Father's Day.
You can sprinkle in a little. I mean, do some dishes, maybe.
Why? Why would I? No. There's every other day I'll do dishes. Why should I do dishes on Father's Day?
Well, because it's like, I mean, the way you just described Sunday was pretty much every day of your life, outside of the fact that you help, you know, you sit in on the planning.
No, but during this quarantine, I've become much more helpful and noticed that I have more capabilities than I ever thought apparent.
Can I say one thing coming out of this whole quarantine situation? Yeah. It's been the last couple months. You know how much I love to cook. I'm actually on the verge, and if I wasn't so, you know, interested in the environment, I would strictly go to paper plates. If I have to wash one more dish or pan, I may just stop eating.
But that's
I'm
not
so
good for
sick
the environment, though, right? The paper plates?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I'm just sucking it up and doing dishes. I am so sick of doing dishes at this point. I can't even tell you.
Well, we'll get to real life sports in a second. But you know what's frustrating to me? The fact that it seems like you have to wash the dish before you even do it. Like, if you put it in, I don't know if you guys are like this, if you put it in with any grime or muck on it, it runs through the cycle and it comes out still dirty. Like, you have to really wash the dish before you put it in the dishwasher.
And not only that, Dave, the food is even more stuck on the plates and dishes that you put in the dishwasher before you actually ran the cycle. Which
you're actually almost glazing the food on when you put it in the dishwasher.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you have to wash the dishes before you put them in the dishwasher.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So what does it do? I mean, what is it saving you? Drying the dish?
Nothing.
It's really?
Nothing.
Really? There's no reason to even run the dishwasher.
It's ridiculous.
Because you have to wash the dishes. There's no way around it.
It's the same thing when you're a kid and your mom's like, you gotta clean up before the cleaning person comes over. It's like, well, why am I cleaning up if someone's coming over to clean? Kind of defeats the whole purpose.
Well, it just goes back to how you're brought up in the mean streets of Long Island, where you have to worry about, you know, the cleaning people coming in.
It's hard out there, Rick.
It's hard. No, when I was a kid, I didn't.
Do you now?
Well, not now. During this, not, well, I mean, not,
do you
not
now in this day
pandemic.
And age?
Yeah, we have someone that I'm
all
trying,
right,
to, I'm trying
right.
to stimulate
no,
the economy.
Don't look at me like I'm a mean street guy, and you have a duo of people coming in weekly.
I have one person.
Yeah,
Jeanette. Who's the nicest lady on the planet, who we're continuing to take care of because that's what we should do
well,
at this time.
That's what you do.
But, I mean, takes care of the kids, love her. It's great. We don't need one, but
it's a bonus.
I mean, yeah, it's a bonus. It's great. It helps the wife out. We got two kids almost, you know what I'm saying?
I understand. You don't have to convince me of anything. All right, let's get to real world. And this was awful. I watched the ESPYs last night, which were so well done and so emotional and so serious and so on point. And then I finish with the ESPYs, and I go on Twitter, and I start reading about what happened at Talladega Super Speedway in Alabama about a noose in the garage stall of Bubba Wallace. And it just – every time – and this is probably not fair, Chris, but it feels like every time you take two steps forward, you feel like you take one or two steps back with something like this happening. It's really disheartening.
It is disheartening, Dave. I mean, what happened yesterday at Talladega to me equates to domestic terrorism. I mean, that's ultimately what this is. This is trying to use fear to intimidate Bubba Wallace and the sport of NASCAR for taking a stance against the Confederate flag and trying to create an inclusive, welcoming environment, which is something that we should be all striving to do. But to me, Dave, this is just another example of why we have to continue to talk about these things, why we have to continue to have these conversations, because the reality is that there are a lot of Americans in denial about what black and brown Americans are experiencing in this country, in the fight for equality, in the fight against racism. And yesterday is just another one of those things. I mean, NASCAR had taken steps to ban the Confederate flag from their events, and yet you still had some idiot in an airplane before the race flying with a Confederate flag banner saying defund NASCAR. You still had people that were on the boulevard that runs along the speedway waving Confederate flags from their cars, from their RVs. So this is not something that's gone away. This is something that's still alive and well, even though NASCAR as an entity has taken a stance. But it just reminds us that we have to continue to have these conversations because we have to change the culture as it pertains to racism in this country. Like, we have to do that. This is something that we've got to talk about. We've got to make it be known that it's not enough to not be racist, but we all have to be anti-racism. And you still have people out there that still perpetuate these ideologies. They still promote these ideologies of white privilege and superiority. And we've got to find a way to deconstruct that, and we've all got to do it together.
Well, I think the other thing it does, I mean, you use the word idiot. I mean, it just highlights the, you know, level of stupidity and ignorance that still exists. I mean, what were you expecting them to do? Whoever it was, and they'll find whoever did it. Yeah. To intimidate Bubba Wallace? That's not what you did. I mean, you're just the people that you're going out of your way to show that you hate, you're only making that group of people, myself included, Dave Rothenberg included, Chris King, more united and stronger. I mean, that's all you're doing. First of all, you're a coward. First of all, I mean, that's the most cowardly thing you can do. And second of all, I mean, let's not get it twisted. What waving the Confederate flag is a symbol of? It's a you're not welcome. And that's the opposite of what NASCAR is trying to do right now. They're trying to eliminate that. They're trying to move forward, progress. And you're going to be left. I mean, those people, you're going to be left behind. There's no time for that anymore. As a white person, I'm fed up with it. Enough. Why spend your time? I was thinking about this too, and I was listening to, you know, Get Up and everything this morning and talking about things that you need. I think Marcus Spears said it, you know, things that you do in the dark. Who wants to live like that? Like, you're going to invest that much time in your life, like, dude, hating somebody in the privacy of meetings in your own home? What kind of life is that?
Yeah, you say it, and it seems completely foreign to me and to you and to Chris and to a lot of people. But Rick, sadly, and I think this is the reality, there's plenty of people, and you see this more and more, the more change that we try to put forth, that don't want change, that are willing to sacrifice to go out and hang a noose in Bubba Wallace's stall at Talladega. Like, if you're willing to do that, to take that kind of a risk, to go ahead and go forth and put something like that in there, obviously this change is something that you're completely opposed to. And obviously we saw yesterday as well, it's not one person, right? There are plenty of people that are on the other side of this, and that's very sad to me.
It's sad, but these people are only highlighting how ridiculous their belief is. I mean, that's all they're doing. I mean, this movement that is going on, it's just like these conversations and everything else, everything we're trying to do. You watch the ESPYs, Black Lives Matters, everything. All of this now this perfect storm with, you know, what we've seen on TV, innocent black people being killed, the murder of George Floyd. Like, everyone's paying attention. Everyone is trying to, well, not everyone, because obviously you have these
exactly,
idiots. But
not everyone.
No, but are moving towards, you know, change. That's what you're doing. And by doing what you did to Bubba Wallace, I mean, you saw the outpouring from everyone, you know, his, you know, between, you know, Dale Hart, Earnhardt Jr. Like, now it's being like, now you get a chance that everyone's watching and you see it. And I know I was outraged when I heard it.
Of course, how could you not be?
The first thing I actually thought, because I watched the ESPYs too, and they, you know, bringing up Jackie Robinson. Could you imagine? I mean, the first thing I thought, could you imagine what Jackie Robinson had to hear back then?
No. No.
Like, I thought about it. I'm like, wow. I mean,
they used to spit at him.
But it's like, I don't know if you could, I mean.
You can't imagine how it feels. You can't.
No. How many people could handle that?
You can't. You can't put yourself in that position. And not a lot of people can handle something like that, Rick. But here's the thing. Black and brown Americans have been well aware of what's been going on for years now. Like, we know what it is. And so while we say this is something that's hard to fathom, a lot of black and brown Americans have experiences throughout their lifetime that show them that white Americans don't view you as equal. And that's the problem that we're having. And when we had what happened to George Floyd on Memorial Day, when we saw actual law enforcement officers, people charged to protect and to serve, taking his life away without a care in the world, that's the part of it that's callous, that's cruel, and we knew existed, but to that extent, I don't think anybody recognized how brutal that can be. And we saw that and it was like, okay, America, we've got to wake up. Something has got to happen because that wasn't right. Usually when we have those types of incidents where black men unarmed being killed at law enforcement, you're talking about split second decisions. And what Derek Chauvin did to George Floyd happened over 8 minutes. Ample time for him to make a different decision to try to protect the life of Mr. Floyd.
But it was not a split second moment.
He decided not to do that. And that, to a lot of black and brown Americans, Okay, yep. This is just another example of our lives don't mean as much as white Americans. Because if they did, Derek Chauvin would have made a different choice. That man would be alive if he were white. That's hard to reconcile if you're a black or brown American. It is. And what happened yesterday in Alabama is just another example of that. And at some point, it's got to change. And while we all talk about, yeah, everybody is coming together in this fight for equality and the fight against racism, you know, it's tough to say that we're all doing that when we've got politicians out here still spewing divisive rhetoric and promoting, or not even promoting, but fostering a safe haven for those ideologies to exist. And at some point, we're going to have to call them to the carpet, too. I know this is a sports show. We don't get into politics, but damn it, our political leaders have to be a part of uniting this country and healing this country so we can move past this, so we can become the America that's outlined in the ideals that are in our Constitution. At some point, that has to happen. And it hasn't happened yet. And we keep finding incidents like what took place yesterday at Talladega Speedway. We keep having stuff like that happen. And at some point, it's got to change. And either you're a part of the solution or you are the problem. That's the culture that we have to create in this country when it comes to racism.
Yeah, but you know what, Chris? And I think the white person that wants to be a part of the solution but hasn't really, I mean, and white people don't experience the same thing, you know, that black and brown people experience. I mean, we all know that, right? That's understood. Mm-hmm. But when something like George Floyd happens and you get a chance to watch it and you're sick to your stomach, you want to throw up because you can't believe it's happening, or how heinous putting a noose, that's like walking into your locker room and in your stall is a noose, right? I mean, that's what that would equate to.
Of course.
Like how heinous that is that now you can't choose to ignore it.
Just it's a threat though, Rick. That's the thing. That's a threat.
We all know
what the symbolism of a noose is. That is a threat on a man's life.
Exactly
that's what
right.
That is.
And you can, as a white person, I can't relate to it because that's never happened to me, but it's so heinous that you can't ignore. Like, you just can't go about your everyday life like, oh, it doesn't happen to me, so I'm just going to ignore it.
You got people out there on social media that are suggesting that Bubba Wallace pulled a Jussie Smollett and did that to his own garage, saying that, oh, he might have been the one to perpetrate that. It's only NASCAR personnel. There aren't any fans involved. It's got to be somebody that's associated with the race team. And I just can't believe that there are any race teams in NASCAR that are so evil and have that much hatred. So it must be Bubba Wallace trying to, quote-unquote, clout chase and put that in his own locker in the garage. It's ridiculous. But you got people out there floating that kind of stuff and promoting that kind of stuff. And people are buying into it. And I think the folks that buy into it, the reality is they don't want to believe that these things are happening because they don't want to do the work that it takes to address it. And they don't know what the reality is going to be on the other side of it. People are afraid of change. And for a community that is largely unaffected by brutality toward black and brown Americans, I mean, people are like, well, if it doesn't affect me, why should I bother with doing the work to actually go about trying to change things for the better in terms of equality in this country? What's my incentive? What's my motivation? There are people out there that feel that way. And it's apparent. And it's sad.
Well, those people are going to get left behind then. Because change is going to happen. It's not going to be overnight. But, I mean, we're at a point now where it has to. Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
It has
Cause
to.
Because at some point it's going to affect you. It is. I mean, you keep going back and forth with, and I'll say this, I mean, until I'm blue in the face. I see how my kids at their age interact with, you know, how Milo interacts with Chris, who's a 6'8", 300-pound black man, loves him to death. I mean, how he reacts to, and he's got, you know, every skin color, every ethnicity in his school, just his buddies. It's a taught behavior. At some point, if you're teaching your kids the right way, this is going to affect you. Even if it doesn't affect you, it's going to affect your kid because he's going to have friends that this affects. I've seen it happen on my hockey team. It's affected me. I'm at some point, it's going to affect you. And now is the time because you have everyone paying attention that steps need to be I mean, steps need to be taken so people like that guy or who, whoever it is, I don't know who it is, flying that stupid Confederate flag over Talladega or whoever put this noose in Bubba Wallace's garage, they get left behind. Mm. They become the minority. Let's get past them. Either you're on board or you're not.
I think they are the minority, though. I truly believe they are the minority, but they're still loud. You still hear what they're saying. I mean, it's hard to ignore it. So are they minority? They're the minority, yeah. I don't think the majority of people are evil and bad. I think it's the minority. But when they do that stuff, it resonates very loudly, Chris, very loudly.
Yeah, right. Dave, I'm with you on that one. I think they are in the minority, but they're a minority that's allowed to be loud and boisterous about their position, and they actually have political figures that you know, endorse that kind of behavior or condone that kind of behavior. And so at some point, that has to change too. Like, the change that we're looking to see is cultural, but it's also systemic. And, you know, you can get into the conversation of the chicken or the egg, which one comes first. But I think the reality is this country is in a place where we are looking for leadership in this fight for equality and the fight against racism. And we're getting it from a lot of corporations. We're getting it from sports entities. But it needs to come from people in our government, the people that we elect in order to help our society run the way that it's supposed to run. And certainly that hasn't necessarily happened, or at least it hasn't changed to the degree that we would all like to see, given the times that we're living in the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And so that's a part of my frustration. It's just like, we recognize that there's a problem. We've seen the video. I don't think anybody can dismiss the fact that America has a problem with race relations. But now it's about having the necessary urgency to go about fixing the problem. And when you start talking about it literally being life or death, we would like to see more people mobilized, not just to push for the changes that we want to see with legislation and the changes we want to see in policing and equal opportunities, but also in the culture. When we have these people that are in the minority spewing these hateful, divisive things, we need to vilify those individuals. We do. We need to treat them like the people that they are. They are terrorists to our way of life, what we're trying to fight for. They are terrorizing it. They are dealing in fear and hate, and that's not what America is supposed to be about. So this is a moment where we got to look ourselves in the mirror as Americans. We got to check ourselves, and we got to decide what kind of country do we want to be. And I think by these protests that continue to happen, you're seeing overwhelmingly the responses, we want to change for the better.
Yes. Yes.
But now it's time for those individuals that still want to hold on to the past and the way things were. We got to start calling all of those people out. We do.
You're right. And not only do we need to call them out, when these people are found, they need to be prosecuted. You can't do stuff like that.
Yes. That's a hate crime, Dave.
A hate crime.
That's a hate crime. There's no question about it in my mind.
And what you've seen between, you know, what you saw in that video with George Floyd, what just happened with Bubba Wallace, it's so blatant. Like, it's, but there's no, I feel the same way to a certain degree about the news that I felt about what I saw with George Floyd. I understand, completely different, but there's no, you can't explain it away. There's no, you know, you can be on, you know, one side or the other. What you saw with George Floyd was murder. Putting a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage, that's blatant.
That's a threat.
It's a threat. I mean, there's no trying to, you know, work your way around it. So, I mean, did you see what happened? Did you see what Clint Boyer tweeted today?
I did not.
I love it. So it's a picture of him and Bubba Wallace on motorcycles. And he says, I'll race with him on Sunday and I ride with him on a Monday. I do this because he's family, our NASCAR family. It's hard for me to comprehend all this, but one thing is for sure. When you F with family, you're effing with all of us.
Mm-hmm. That's good on Clint Boyer for doing that. But Rick, that's what it's going to take to change hearts and minds, man. We're going to have strong allies. We are. We, you know, black and brown Americans can't do it by ourselves. If we could, we would have been done it by now. But that's not the reality. We need white Americans to come alongside us and walk with us and fight with us. You know what I'm saying? I saw Rihanna put something out there on a post that says, if you want to pull up for black culture and you want to enjoy our music, enjoy our arts, enjoy our athleticism, then pull up when we're fighting for change too. Like, that's how you get invited to the cookout. Not just by being with us in the good times, but actually helping us fight through in bad times. And this is a bad time right now. This is a revolutionary time. This is a transformative time. And when you start talking about change, that can become dangerous, Dave, because some people don't want to change. But we have to get to a point as a society where we're no longer going to condone those types of ideologies or those types of people.
You're right. We can't. We have to stand up right now. This is the time. There is no, we'll do it in 6 months or the next time. You don't want there to be a next time. You want to stop it now. And I think
this is the time, Dave, this is the time to do it now.
Of course it is. But I think honestly, I think a lot of people don't know what to do.
Well, Dave, and that may be true, but I think a lot of people have to recognize that it's your responsibility to educate yourself so you can figure out what your lane is in this fight. Everybody's going to have a different role to play, but you just got to figure out what your skill set is, what your experience is, and then educate yourself on what's the best way that you can help to try to attack the problems that we're facing. That responsibility is not on black Americans. That's on everybody.
You're
as
right.
Americans.
You're right.
So, I mean, you know, listen, this is disappointing that Bubba Wallace has to experience this. And, you know, you just hope we get to a day and age sooner rather than later where this is not happening. But Dave, we have to realize that we have a problem. And we have to be willing to acknowledge that.
But I think,
there are some people that just don't want to do it.
Chris, but I think, and it's not fair to Bubba Wallace, but something like this happening is only going to make, you know, the white people that want to be a part of this pay attention and get on board. Because it's like I keep saying, it's just blatant. Like, you can't, there's no explaining your way around this thing. Like, I don't even know what to say, man. The level of ignorance and stupidity, it makes me sick to my stomach. It really does. Cause it's all.
I mean, you know what, Rick, you're using the perfect word though, ignorance. That's really what this is. That's what we're fighting against. And it's hard to use facts. It's hard to use education to fight against ignorance when you just have people that are set on being ignorant. Like, they it's willful ignorance is what it is.
Well, it's hatred is what it is.
But it's not even, but it's hatred, but it's not even real. The reason what makes it dumbfounding to me is like what you're trying to accomplish. You've done the opposite. Like, you're trying to send a message. The only message you sent was, you know, it's not good. Bubba Wallace is not going to back down. He has the support of, I mean, he talked about, you know, speaking to his mom and the support of Clint Boyer and the rest of NASCAR. They're moving in this direction. So, I mean, all this news, so whatever you're trying to accomplish, it's only making NASCAR and everyone in NASCAR more unified to continue on with change.
I hear you, and you're right. I think it does continue to push this out to the forefront, to make this a conversation, to make this a part of, you know, the national consciousness. But at the same time, Rick, it's interesting when these types of things happen, because you're trying to intimidate the individual, but also there's a message that's sent on how the country reacts to it. And so if we don't have a strong enough reaction, you're going to still allow these types of ideologies to exist. And so to me, it's not enough for the sport of NASCAR to just, you know, ban the person for life, whoever did this. But this needs to be a hate crime. Like Dave says, we need to prosecute these individuals. This needs to be behavior that's no longer acceptable, behavior that can land you in jail. That's what this needs to be. That's when you'll ultimately have the change. When you start talking about the law being on the side of equality and being against racism, that's what's necessary. And that hasn't happened to the degree that we would need, because if it did, we wouldn't have what happened on Sunday at the race.
I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere you go. Click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. or with the way the world is heading right now, where you do not go. 800-919-3776. And I really felt strongly, guys, that today's show would be about the return of Major League Baseball. The players would have approved the vote last night. They've delayed it. Hopefully they're going to vote in a day or two, but you know, we still are without baseball as we sit here right now.
Yeah, it's going to get interesting, too. One of the things I read over the weekend, too, was with, and I mean, this is a perfect example of, you know, some of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, you see what's happening in Florida with these training facilities. When you don't have strict protocols and you just say, okay, you know, be an adult, social distance, take care of yourself, and they're not testing every single day, this is what happens. Guys go out because Florida was open. You know, people, half the people aren't even wearing masks. You go out and you go to dinner or you go to the grocery store and then, you know, you catch it and you bring it into the locker room. And now they're forced to shut down all these facilities, which is, I think, made it a little bit more tricky if you're the player side, because now the owners can use this as a reason why they can only play so many games. So how do you grieve that now? Did you lose that leverage? Did you lose the grievance leverage now because you have to shut these facilities down and push back the start whenever that's going to happen?
Well, I guess that part of it will be a little bit tricky just because there are going to be some teams that are able to start a spring training in areas where it seems like they're on the other side of the curve. And so I don't know how much bearing that actually has on, you know, the players filing a grievance against the owners for not negotiating in good faith and having a season as long as they possibly could. But I will say this, it's just at this point, I'm starting to feel like it's up in the air as to whether or not we're going to have baseball. Because when I asked Buster the question on the show last week about whether or not we'd see baseball if the players didn't agree to waive their right to file a grievance, Buster said, no, that's not going to happen. And with the owners rejecting the players' proposal of 70 games, full prorated salaries, it just doesn't feel like either side is willing to give beyond where they're actually at right now.
I think the players are going to actually pass the 60 games. I know you don't feel like that, Chris. I feel like they're going to pass the 60.
Well, Jesse Rogers said last night that he didn't think that was going to happen.
Until it happens, I do not think that we're not going to see baseball. I can't put my arms around that. I don't believe it.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's an interesting question as to whether or not the players would agree to it. They delayed the vote, and Rob Manfred wanted to clarify to Tony Clark in an email that the changes that they would make in 2020 weren't going to roll over in 2021 as far as the expanded playoffs and the universal DH. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, the way that Rob Manfred has been going back and forth with Tony Clark and then putting things in writing via emails, it just feels like it's setting itself up for litigation. And I know Buster said that last week, but I feel like we are inevitably going to end up in front of an arbitrator in a courtroom with these two sides at odds. It just doesn't feel like they're going to be able to find middle ground where they can come to an agreement to play baseball this summer. It feels like if we're going to see baseball this summer, it's going to be Rob Manfred unilaterally imposing a schedule on the players.
Yeah, I don't think there's a season. I mean, here's the thing. I don't think there's going to be a season if the players don't waive their ability to file a grievance. The owners won't be on board with that.
No way.
No, there's no chance. And I think, I mean, if you're Tony Clark, with what's going on now, I mean, in Florida and Texas and in Arizona with the spikes and everything else, having to close facilities, I mean, you could use this as, I mean, if it does, I mean, if there is no season, it is grieved or whatever ends up happening, you jam this down the player's throat and they end up filing a grievance, I mean, this would be part of your argument as to why you couldn't play a certain amount of games. Because you were forced to shut down the facilities and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just shut them all down over the weekend to scrub them down with the mass outbreak of COVID-19.
But Dave, this is the perfect example of what would scare you to death if you're the NFL. Is that you guys just, I mean, because you're not in a bubble situation, you got guys just living their lives, going, you know, wherever they choose to go. It only takes one or two guys, and then you put them in close proximity. That's baseball.
The NFL is terrifying.
Rick, the NFL is terrifying because of the nature of the sport, but I don't think the NFL is as concerned for the welfare of their players. I think the NFL is content testing guys, you know, a few times a week, three or four times a week, and knowing that guys are going to get it. They're depending on guys being young and in relatively good health in order for them to get past the coronavirus. I think that they're just looking at it from a numbers standpoint and just making sure they have enough healthy bodies to field a team each and every week. But I think the NFL is content letting the coronavirus wash over their teams and letting it run through their locker rooms. I don't think the NFL owners much care about, you know, the well-being of the players. I don't think they're worried about something tragic happening to one of their guys because of the coronavirus.
Until it does.
Well, I mean, you see that in college football right now. It feels like they're just doing an experiment right now.
Yeah,
just like they're experimenting on college kids.
Yeah, just let it wash over the team, see what happens. And if nobody gets sick to the point where their life is in jeopardy, then we feel justified in making a choice to move forward. I think that the NFL is taking that same type of approach. It's the same mindset.
If that's the mindset, they got to get the players back earlier.
What'd you say, Rick?
If that's going to be the mindset, then they're going to have to get the players back sooner rather than later then.
Well, that's why they're talking about having players come back in a few weeks, in the middle of July. Rather than reporting for training camp at the end of July, beginning of August, we're going to have guys come back in the middle of July. And I know Cam Hayward actually said something about that because his team is scheduled to play in the Hall of Fame game this year. He was saying that you need 47 days of activity before you play in your first game. I think this is one of those situations where the NFL is probably going to move to bring guys back because they recognize that it's going to be next to impossible to create a true bubble environment for the duration of the season and have everybody adhere to all of those protocols.
Which is so transparent. I mean, which would just speak further to the point that they could care less, that if, you know, they're just realizing players will get it.
Yeah, because if you're only testing guys two or three times a week, come on, Rick. Is that really enough?
No, it's got to be daily. It has to be.
Yeah, but it's also, Dave, I mean, in their opinion, and they'll never say this, it's, I mean, as long as because of, you know, your age, no underlying health conditions and everything else, you'll get it. Maybe you're asymptomatic, you test positive, you get through it, you have the antibodies. I mean, that's if you gave them true serum, that's what they would want, that everyone just gets it, fights through it, and then is good to go when the season starts. You don't
sure.
have to worry about it.
But is that realistic to think that's going to happen? That all of these players are going to test positive, right? Or
well,
have
no,
the
you
antibodies
don't,
and you're
but
not going to worry about it?
No, you don't know. And no one's comfortable saying that because you don't know the long-term ramifications. Yeah, you can get through it, but who knows what the long-term ramifications are. That's why I don't like what's going on in college right now with these football players. It's almost like you're using them as guinea pigs to see how, you know, to see how this thing goes through a locker room.
Which is crazy to me. But I think when it comes to the NFL, the NFL owners aren't going to push back if the NFL players aren't. And so I think that's why it's important to know where the executive committee and the NFLPA executive director, DeMaurice Smith, stand on this issue and what are going to be the realities in terms of ways of attacking, you know, the coronavirus problem and trying to prevent the transmission of the virus. Like, I think the NFLPA is going to set the tone on what the NFL implements as far as protocols and their method of dealing with this.
So today's June 22nd. Let me ask you, let me switch back to baseball quickly. Rick, you've been on my side the whole time, believing that baseball would come back. Do you think that we still get the return to baseball, or are you starting to switch over to where Canty is?
I'm almost leaning towards what you said, that you feel like the players are going to end up voting in the 60 games.
I believe that.
Well, listen to this. I mean, this is Ken Rosenthal, right? So it says in a letter to Tony Clark today, Rob Manfred, this was 18 hours ago he tweeted this. Rob Manfred said, I really believe we're fighting over an impossibility of games. Says, given the need to relocate teams from Florida, earliest players could report is June 29th, leaving 66 days to play 60 games. Which is like check another box.
Yeah, he's
like
baking it in there to say we have no choice but to play 60 games.
So I think you're going to have to weigh what are our chances. Like our leverage is we take this to a grievance. If we don't vote it in, he institutes the 48, 50 games or whatever it ends up being. What are our chances of actually winning in a grievance? And it feels like Rob Manfred is just checking all these boxes so that if they do go to court, they'll have as, you know, as good a case as possible.
Well, what that's saying is that the owners feel like their strategy worked. They were able to buy enough time. They were able to eat up enough of the calendar going back and forth with Tony Clark and the MLBPA to where we get to the point where we only have a certain amount of games we can play because of a certain amount of days left in the calendar that we're comfortable with, given the concerns about a second wave of coronavirus.
So I mean, yeah, shutting down the facilities.
The owner's posturing worked.
Yes, and shutting down the facilities was not great. Right.
They were able to successfully implement this strategy, and we're at a point now where even a grievance would be up in the air just because of what's been happening around the country in the southern states. But that still doesn't mean that the owners operated in good faith in trying to figure out a way forward this summer with the coronavirus.
No, I don't think they did at all. But now you're to the point where, you know what, 60 games may be the best that you can probably get sitting here on June 22nd.
Yeah, but a month ago that wasn't the case.
Correct. But if you're the players, do you risk it and try to bring this to court, or do you just say, you know what, let's play 60 games and be done with it?
I mean, in any other year, I think you would probably decide to go ahead and play games, but because you have the backdrop of the 2021 CBA negotiations, I don't know that the players are going to acquiesce to what the owners want. I don't, like I said, I feel like we're at an impasse and both sides don't want to move. Like Jesse Rogers, you know, writer for ESPN on the baseball side, he said that last night with SVP, he said that he did not think that the players would accept this offer. He said that the players will probably reject this offer. We'll see what happens. But if the players reject this offer, then where do we go from
there? I don't know what else there is to be done.
That's what I'm saying. Where do we go from there?
I think you might be at a stalemate.
Do you just announce the cancellation of the season?
Oh, it'd be such do you try to implement a season?
I don't know. But I mean, for all the baseball fans, fingers crossed, you're hoping that the players accept this most recent proposal by the owners. But the fact that they issued a counter proposal at 70 games lets you know that there is enough of a contingent of players where they felt uncomfortable accepting the 60 on Friday.
I felt like they still thought there was room to negotiate.
Mm-hmm. And Manfred said there's not. It's 60. This is what your offer is.
Yeah, I think you go 70. If they tell you in the meeting, if Rob Manfred looks at Tony Clark and says, we're not doing 70, you come back with 70. I mean, I guess your hope is that, you know, there's still some wiggle room when we get to 65.
But the owners didn't give on anything, though, Rick. That's the crazy thing. They wanted to pay $1.4, $1.5 billion in players' costs. And that's exactly what it would be if they played 60 games. $1.5 billion. What did they give?
Well, they haven't given anything.
They haven't given anything.
No, but I mean, you just said it. They haven't given anything in this entire time their strategy is working, where they just keep peeling days off the calendar, and we're going to get to a point like I just read you. You have 66 days to play 60 games.
Which is when? Which would be a start of what date?
They said the earliest players could report is June 29th.
Okay, but then do you have a start of the season?
July 19th? It doesn't 19th, say that when they would
have been there. Right?
The thing that's so frustrating to me is you could be the only sport going on for 10-plus days. People would
having
baseball.
Yeah, but time out. You say that, and you're right. But again, we keep overlooking the fact that we're so focused on the money that we haven't really spent any time talking about, you know, what happens once they do report with the testing, like the health concerns now. I mean, you've seen all these facilities get shut down. What happens now? It's not going to be a bubble.
Should be.
It's not.
I know.
And there's not enough time to get that back. I mean, to get that conversation
you
back
see what's
up
going on in Florida and Arizona right now?
I do. Yeah. My in-laws live in Florida right now. They're in the middle of it. And people still aren't taking it serious.
No, it's amazing.
I want my one request, and I'll probably just text him this. I want to know, because you saw it happen in golf. So Nick Watney shows up. He actually traveled with Sergio Garcia. Tuesday, he tests negative. Ends up, the only symptom he has is because his heart rate monitor on his watch, or whatever device he's using, was sketchy. That was a symptom. Was that his heart rate was not normally what it should be. So he got tested and he tests positive.
Mm-hmm.
Now the guys who he's playing with tested, they're negative. What's the time frame? I want to know what the time frame is. If you come into contact with someone that's asymptomatic and that person is positive and you've been spending like an entire golf round or whatever it is around that person, if I get tested that next day, will it show up? Or will it just be a false negative because I haven't had enough time for it to, you know, percolate my system? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I don't know that we have the answer.
Like, does it take 2 days? Like,
you
if I
know
get
the
tested,
incubation period, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Because if it's instantly in your system, you can test negative, you know, as close to 100% negative or positive as possible with these tests. Then that makes it, I think, a little bit more doable than, you know, it could just sit in your system for 2 days. Like, you could initially test negative, and then 2 days later, you pop positive. There's still so many questions, man.
Well, do we know that it, once you have the antibodies, that you, there's no way you can you can
no.
get it again?
No, the one thing coming out of Italy now is that it seems like the effects of COVID have lessened. It's not as fatal.
Which is huge.
It's weakened.
Which is huge. And they said that there was a good chance of that happening with the hot weather.
Yeah, but again, I don't think it gets to the point where it's just that you're not going to let guys play through it. It won't kill you, but you're still going to have to sit out for 2 weeks.
But look at where we are. I mean, Austin Matthews, right? I mean, Grigor Dimitrov. I mean, you have big-time players that are now contracting this.
Yeah, and if they get through it, fingers crossed, then they'll be, I mean, then, you know, you would imagine it's not something you have to worry about with these players. But even if you get to the point where it's weakened, where it's still looked at, it's not life-threatening, it's kind of like when we look at the flu. You let guys play through the flu. You're not going to let anyone play through COVID-19.
No.
You're still going to have to isolate them for 10 to 14 days. So it doesn't really solve the problem. You're still losing, you know, that player for, he can't do anything for 2 weeks and then try to reacclimate himself to playing.
But isn't that the point of having expanded rosters? I mean, we've been talking about that with football, but they're also doing that with baseball. So, I mean, you're going to have guys that are going to miss, you know, a couple of weeks because they're going to be infected with the virus. And you're banking on guys stepping in and playing in their stead. The only question is, how do you keep those other guys safe from the one player that's infected on the team? That's the question that you're asking, right?
Because how you would do that.
You're trying to make sure that you isolate that one player. And in order to do that, you've got to know that the guy is positive. And can we actually have an accurate test, even if the guy is asymptomatic?
Let me ask you another crazy question that has nothing to do with sports, just is life in general. I was going through some of the stuff for the show this morning, and you kind of like almost sick to my stomach with what's going on with college football. But how do you, if you have to, the second, so Nick Watney, right, for example, is down in Hilton Head. So he tests positive. He has to self-isolate, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's from Vegas. So either he drives himself back to Vegas or
he should probably just lock away in Hilton Head.
Well, that's what he's going to do.
Right.
What happens? Okay, so schools,
not
colleges.
Not a bad place to be locked away, by the way.
No. But again, he's got means, he's got money, so he can stay at a nice hotel, whatever. What happens when all these kids come back to college and you're in a dorm and the kid tests positive and is supposed to self-isolate, but he's from a different state? How's that? What's that kid supposed to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Does the university put him up somewhere?
That's going to be next to impossible, Ricky.
How does that work? I mean, I get the football players, you know, find a hotel or whatever.
Schools know how it works, Rick. I don't think these colleges and universities have a plan.
Did you see what's going on at LSU? Like, what is it, like 100 cases throughout the bars around LSU?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's with no one on campus yet.
They just quarantined 30 players, didn't they?
Yes.
And yeah. Clemson, too, had, 28 quarantined?
Well, no, 23 tested positive. They don't know how many. They have 30. They have 30 quarantined, but they don't know how many have tested positive yet at LSU. They're just quarantining because they've been around people that have tested positive. How does that work in a dorm?
I don't know.
It doesn't work in a dorm, Rick. It doesn't. When you have common bathrooms and showers, it does not work. It doesn't work.
Where are all these kids going? That's the thing I don't understand. Where are they going?
Right, college kids. Who don't know where their next meal is going to come from. Now they're going to lock away for 2 weeks.
Well, but most of them lock away, Dave. They got to eat. They got to go to the bathroom.
I'm saying, well, how do you, you're a college kid. You're a poor college kid. Now you're supposed to figure out and you know what? You're not the brightest person in the world. You're 18. You're not supposed to be. You're 19 years old. Now you have a real life problem.
Yeah, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense.
It's kind of scary to think about.
It is.
To put kids in that kind of jeopardy.
And you're gonna put a lot of kids at risk. That's really what it comes to. You're gonna put a lot.
But you're already putting. But Chris, they don't care. They're already putting these college football players at risk. They're sitting here telling you
they should care, Rick. They should care.
And they should, but they don't. But they don't.
And the problem that I have is the entity that's responsible for the welfare of these student athletes is also the entity that benefits the most from them having games. So there is a clear conflict of interest right there.
That was my favorite.
There should be a separate body looking out for these kids, and good on the UCLA football players for demanding that there be some oversight with the coronavirus testing, and they want a third party. They don't want to rely on the athletic trainers and the medical staff at UCLA. They want somebody separate and apart. And that's good for them because that's absolutely their right. They should have that.
Yep. Here's some news from our buddy Jordan Renan on the Giants. The Giants are offering their season ticket holders the opportunity to take the season off. Given the current COVID-19 crisis, PSLs will remain fully intact for the 2021 season.
Nice gesture. Yeah, that's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. They're not the only team that's doing it. It's the right thing to do. I mean, there are going to be people that are uncomfortable coming to the stadium. They shouldn't have to fork over all of that money and not enjoy the entertainment value that they're supposed to get in return for it. So that's the right thing by
the
guys.
It is the right thing to do. But just because it's the right thing to do doesn't mean that every entity is going to do the right thing. So we point out when
you know what my you know what my favorite part of the whole college football conversation was this morning? Was that the mindset moving forward is that it's probably a lot safer when they're actually playing because it's outdoors as opposed to being in close proximity to each other indoors in the gym.
Yeah, it's a lot safer.
So let's expose them to the gym first, see how that works out.
And that'd be phase one.
That phase one football. Of the testing.
CMT, the floor is yours.
All right, here we go, fellas. I was going to light things up, be honest. I was going to light things up, go back to the Adam Sandler movie category. But I said, you know what? I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it. We did desserts on
Chris,
Friday.
You missed wonderful desserts on Friday.
What was your cut of Mary Trash for desserts, Dave?
I mean, I was asked everything. I was asked. The one obvious one was we were asked the oatmeal cookie. That was an obvious trash. Okay.
Which Carlin hated, which was the one you absolutely had to marry. Like you didn't hesitate.
The chocolate chip cookie. He asked me.
No, but that was just the cookie. He meant in general of all the time. I felt like the second I mentioned cheesecake, you were like, I'm marrying cheesecake.
I love cheesecake. I'm not going to deny it.
I would say chocolate chip cookie and cheesecake were probably
those are the ones that got the strongest reaction from Dave.
I was very anti the oatmeal.
Which Carlin completely disagreed with. He actually called in. He actually was texting me during the segment saying, DPHO is a hack, fat wannabe. Because Dave said that when it's oatmeal, it's got to be raisin. And Carlin said, no, as a fat guy, raisin doesn't have to be in the oatmeal cookie.
I completely disagree with that. Completely disagree.
So it would have been good to have you.
Raisin has to be in the oatmeal cookie. Just an oatmeal cookie, no raisin? No.
You agree with me.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. Dave. I mean, yeah. Oatmeal cookie comes with the raisin.
Yes.
Yes.
I feel like Chris may actually think about cuddling or marrying the oatmeal cookie.
I don't know if I would. I guess it would depend on everything else that's in the category. But for me, oatmeal cookie and chocolate chip cookie are both right there.
It was the peanut butter cookie and it was the chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, I would trash the peanut butter cookie. Trash.
Really?
Done. Wow. Not even a thought. Yeah. Trash.
And you'd marry the chocolate chip.
I would probably marry the chocolate chip and cuddle the oatmeal, but it's close.
Wow.
Like, if I'm going to marry chocolate chip, like, it's going to be understood that I'm going to have a mistress throughout that marriage, and it's going to be the oatmeal raisin cookie.
All right, we can't go back. We have to move forward. Let's go. What's the topic? Where are we going?
All right, here we go. What we're going to do is, in honor of Dak Prescott signing today sometime his franchise tag, I went quarterback in with Dak and COVID-19. Quarantining and everything else. I went with each team's top two quarterbacks. Strength of top two quarterbacks on the depth chart.
Two quarterbacks, all right.
Yeah, top two. I'm not just going to go single. I'm talking about quarterback room, not the entire room.
So are we saying, could it be three quarterbacks in the room, or is it just only the top two?
I'm going to give you the top two. I'm going to give you the top two. We're not going to get that deep into the weeds.
Okay.
Although I think most teams will end up carrying three, just in case. You should at this point. All right. I'm going to start you off with some young quarterbacks. I'm going to give you Daniel Jones with Colt McCoy.
Okay.
I'm going to give you Sam Darnold with Canty's favorite teammate, Joe Flacco, and Stidham and Hoyer.
All right. I mean, to me, I'm going to trash Stidham and Hoyer.
Fucking garbage. Fucking garbage.
That to me is the easy one. Now, I guess I'm a little torn. I know my answer, but I'm a little torn because I think Colt McCoy is a better backup than Joe Flacco at this point. Health, obviously a concern with Flacco, but to me, Darnold is the better quarterback, you know, moving forward here. I think he's going to be the better quarterback. So I know it's supposed to be the duo, but I think that Darnold is, in my opinion, the one that I'd prefer to have, at least right now. So I will cuddle the Giants combo and marry the Jets combo.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Very interesting, Dave, that you would marry the Jets, knowing full well the dysfunction that exists in that organization. My question has never been about Sam Darnold's talent. It's always been about whether or not the organization is going to be functional enough for him to realize his potential. And I got serious question marks about that. So for that reason, I am going to marry the Giants quarterback room.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
With Daniel Jones and Colt McCoy. I'm doing it. I'm marrying Big Blue. I am going to cuddle up next to the Jets.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I've got to trash the Patriots quarterback room.
They're the oatmeal cookie with the quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want either one of them playing quarterback for me. I mean, to be honest with you, I'd rather have Julian Edelman play quarterback than have those two guys play quarterback.
He's got more experience.
I have a feeling, and this is just maybe me probably just having too much faith in Bill Belichick, which I shouldn't even be saying. Doesn't Jared Stidham have to be decent?
Yeah, you would think so. But you can't pick them over the other two.
No, I wouldn't either. I'm just saying. I mean,
I think he will be better than anybody expects. I would agree. Look, listen, the odds in Vegas, they're basically a pick'em to win the division with Buffalo.
I mean, we act like Tom Brady was like a top 10 pick. I mean, do we forget that he was?
Could you imagine, Chris, if Stidham was good right away?
I it's hard for me to imagine, Dave, and I know that's crazy because Tom Brady was a 6th-round draft pick. It's hard for me to imagine that being the case, like the Patriots putting Jared Stidham at quarterback and just not skipping a beat in terms of being competitive and making it to the postseason. I just, for whatever reason, I just don't envision that. I can't fathom it. But if it does,
you can't fathom it. But you can, like, it just it, it's
yeah. But if any team he would be successful on, it's this one.
I want to ask you guys a legitimate question. I don't want to go too far in the weeds, but if the Patriots were to somehow, some way, make it to the AFC Championship game, do we look at Tom Brady a little bit differently?
Yeah. In Tampa doesn't, yeah.
Yeah.
In Tampa doesn't end up in the NFC Championship game.
We look at Tom Brady differently?
Yes.
All right, that's fair.
I don't know how you couldn't. Still great.
I mean, it would make it feel like Bill Belichick was more responsible for that sustained success.
If they win
the
division and Stidham has a big-time season and they go to the AFC Championship game, I think you have to look at it a little differently.
My head would explode.
All right, continue along now.
All right, here we go. I'm going to give you Foles and Trubisky, Dwayne Haskins and Kyle Allen, Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts.
Oh, come on. Hey, Chris, start us out, but we have to agree on the marry.
Yeah, we're marrying Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts with the Philadelphia Eagles. I know that's hard for you to do.
Marry them.
No, I think this is a no-brainer.
Okay, yeah. So we're marrying them. Now here's where it becomes interesting. Do you cuddle with Washington, Kyle Allen, and Haskins in the potential of that, or do you go with relatively known but underwhelming commodities in Trubisky and Foles?
Well, you decide where you're going to go. I have my decision locked away. Go ahead.
Dave, I am going to go with the devil I don't know. I'm going to roll the dice on Haskins, Allen, and Washington. Just because I believe in Ron Rivera, I know him, I consider him a friend. I know what he's going to do in terms of program building and establishing a culture, being able to establish institutional control. And I think you'll get Haskins to get closer to his potential under this regime. So I am going to cuddle Washington, and I am going to trash the quarterback room of the Chicago Bears, even though they have a Super Bowl MVP in that room.
All right, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm gonna marry Wentz and Hurts.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Cuddle, like you said, the devil you don't know, and Dwayne Haskins and
Bombs
Kyle
and
Allen.
Hellacious seeds.
And I am hoping Haskins is not a big-time quarterback, but I think the potential is there. And I still don't know how Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. It makes no sense to me. It never will. That duo is something I don't want to get involved with. I will trash.
This garbage! Look at this garbage!
Real negative, too, for Nick Foles, if they don't allow you to shower at the facility. Real negative. Because that's when you want to take advantage of your biggest strength, if I'm Nick Foles. You really want to impress the guys. Do it in the shower. Okay, next one up. I'm going to give you Baker Mayfield with Case Keenum. I'm going to give you Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota. And I'm going to give you Fitzmagic and Tua. It's a tricky one.
Yeah, it's not easy. All right, I think we might disagree with this, Chris, but I'm going to marry.
I don't think we will.
You think we will?
I don't think we will. No.
You don't? I think we will.
No.
I'm going to marry.
I have full confidence in you.
I don't know about that. I don't have confidence in myself. I'm going to marry Cleveland.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
I just think that in the new offense.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
That's a surprise. Go ahead.
Yeah, see, I told you we weren't going to agree. I mean, it's a revamped offensive line. It's a head coach you have a lot more confidence in. So I will marry Cleveland. Boy. I'm going to cuddle Miami.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
With the potential of Tua, which is tremendous. And Fitzpatrick is, I mean, let's be fair, he's a serviceable starting quarterback until he can hand over the reins to the young horse there. And then I will trash the Las Vegas Raiders.
Look at this garbage! Look at this garbage!
Final answer, Doug.
Yeah, Dave, we can agree on the trash here. I mean, you got Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota and... You know, let's face it, John Gruden's favorite quarterback is his next quarterback. I don't think he's sold on either one of those guys. So I'm going to throw that in the trash. I'm actually going to marry the Miami Dolphins quarterback.
If it was socially acceptable,
why
I would
marry
them.
In terms of backup quarterbacks, Ryan Fitzpatrick brings more to the table than any of the backups for the Raiders and for the Browns. And as far as upside with the starting quarterback, I don't think there's any quarterback in this group that has more of that than Tua Tagovailoa. So I am going to hitch my wagon to the Miami Dolphins, and plus the fact that I love their head coach, and I think they have some synergy with the general manager and the head coach down there in Miami. So I am going to marry that quarterback room for the Dolphins, and I will cuddle the Browns even though Baker Mayfield is erratic. Baker Mayfield is surrounded by a lot of talent. And I got to think that if Kevin Stefanski is worth his salt as a coach, he'll find a way to get a better version of Baker Mayfield in 2020 than we saw in 2019.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
All right, fellas, so far so good. Last one for you. This could be the most difficult one, hopefully. I'm going to give you Dak. Ready for this? Dak and Dalton.
Yep.
Breeze and Winston. Rogers Brissett. Excuse me, Rivers Brissett. Apologize.
Rivers Brissett.
Oh. When you said Rodgers, I was thinking you were going to go Rodgers Love. Because that would have made it a little bit easier.
No, I'm not going to make it that easy. This is like, you got starting quarter caliber quarterbacks here, boys.
Okay. Clearly to me, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback room is better than the other two. Even though Drew Brees has the resume, I think Drew Brees is past it as a player. And let's face it, I don't necessarily trust trick or treat Jameis, even though I know he's got a tremendous amount of talent. So I'm going to marry the Cowboys quarterback room.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Yeah, I like what they got going on in Dallas. I think that team is poised for a big year. I am going to cuddle the Saints quarterback room.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I am going to trash the Colts quarterback room, and that probably has more to do with Phillip Rivers than anything else. I just don't with Phillip Rivers. I think it's a wrap. I think he's
done. Look at this garbage! Look at this garbage!
All right, this is not easy for me, because head and heart are pulling in two different directions. But I'm going to agree with Chris.
Yes.
All the way across the board. I'm not even going to say it.
Say it. No, you should say it. No,
I
won't say it.
I wouldn't marry them.
Come on.
I'll select the Dallas team.
No, you got to marry. You got to. You got to say it.
How about them Cowboys? I'll do that.
Do you need a prenup for the marriage?
I can't wait till they fall on their face, but I will choose them.
If it was socially acceptable, I wouldn't marry them.
He just, of course, this is the one time he's got the sound bites just ready to drop and roll. And then I'll cuddle into New Orleans.
Bombs,
you know, I don't love
hellacious seeds.
I don't love Breeze, but I love what they have there, and they're such a good team and well coached. play a lot of indoor games. Makes it easier for Drew Brees. And then I don't agree with you on Rivers done, but I will say of the three selections here, it's the worst. I will trash Indy.
Firmly. This garbage! Look at this garbage!
I feel like Rivers is going to have a good season.
I hope
so. For some
so.
Reason. I feel like with that offensive, I feel like they're going to have a good, he's going to have a good season. I mean, they talk about, I mean, first of all, I love their head coach. I mean, the fact that the head coach already has a previous relationship has actually said he thinks that Philip Rivers can play multiple years, which I don't know. I mean, he's already agreed to be a high school football coach when he's done, but.
I like their head coach and their GM. They got
a good offensive line too.
Yeah. Yeah. They built that team the right way. And I think they're building the organization the right way at the same time.
They could, I think they could be a playoff team without a doubt.
Without a doubt?
I think they could be. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they were a playoff team at all. No.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to go that far, but yeah. I mean, listen, I
like what Indy is
building toward. I don't think 2020 is their year. They're probably, you know, close to being scheduled to arrive in 2021, but we'll see what happens. I don't like them more than I like Houston or Tennessee.
Tennessee scares me, man. I feel like that's going to be an interesting division this year.
Houston scares me.
Well, because they like, yeah, but I mean, again.
Because the quarterback, not the coach.
Right. The only thing, thank God they have that quarterback.
Right.
I mean, they don't have DeAndre Hopkins, but they do, I mean, they still have, you know, decent
weapons.
They
got weapons.
They have to be more diverse, but the team that would scare me a little bit is Tennessee. Taking a step back.
Then they could. They could.
DiPietro, Catty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.